Okay, so I just might wait for Father Tom's amends. Might be waiting a while, right? Wow, what a great way to start the weekend, right? Yeah. We are gathered here with 200 of our closest and dearest friends. And I think that is amazing. I am humbled and grateful to be here. My name is Stephanie Butler, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. Hi, everybody. And I want to thank Ellen for inviting us. I really appreciate the invitation. And then Bonnie did the help with the reservations and everything. And Eugenia and Patty and Betty Ann picked us up at the airport, and we had a wonderful drive out. And then we had bags that were fixed for us that had cherries and chocolate, and what more do you need? And to see Kathy and Russ this evening for dinner. It takes a tribe. This takes a village to help raise the kids. This is our tribe. It got us here, and I am really grateful to be here. I love the theme, Joy is in the Journey, because that's what my story is going to be about tonight. I'm going to share my journey with you. And I do. I'm so grateful that Tom is here. I have had a really loving relationship with him for a long time. And the blessing here, my daughter is going to be your speaker in the morning. And I really hate to tell y'all that. Because, you know, she's going to have the last word. So, I'm an Al-Anon and I tell the truth. Just saying. She said when she was a teenager, if my mouth is moving, I'm lying. That was a long time ago. Anyway, I want to share my journey. And there has been joy and there's been sadness, but oh my goodness, this journey started 73 years ago. I was born in Midland, Texas. I'm the oldest of three, and I was born into a Catholic Italian family. I love the laugh right there. There's just a whole lot of dysfunction even in saying that, right? And I'm grateful. Grateful to be Italian and grateful to be Catholic. And so, when I came into the program, I thought, I don't understand how come I need to come to Al-Anon, because I started looking at the inventory that I took. I was born in Midland, and shortly after I was born, we moved to San Antonio, and that's where I grew up. So I tried to look at, where was the dysfunction in my family? Well, my daddy was a workaholic. He held three jobs to try to support our family. My mother was one of eight children born on a dirt farm outside of Fort Worth, Texas. And her daddy was a bootlegger. So I believe that my mama was raised in an alcoholic home, and she was raised by an untreated Al-Anon. So therefore, I believe I was raised by an untreated Al-Anon. People say all the time, oh, she must be an Al-Anon because her behavior is a little bizarre. But I believe you're an untreated Al-Anon, you're in Al-Anon if you go to meetings, work the steps, get a sponsor, and read the literature. Otherwise, you just kind of hang out. And so I think my mama was an untreated Al-Anon. So then I started looking at some of the beliefs that I was raised with. And one of the beliefs was, if you do good, you will get good. So I followed all the rules. I did exactly what I was supposed to do when I was supposed to do it. And I think I grew up with a lot of fear, and I don't even know where that came from. I don't feel like my parents were just extremely strict. So in my little brain, that's what I came up with. The other thing was I looked at you, and you looked so put together, and I felt so less than. So when I got here, I heard you say, we judge our insides by your outsides. And I always felt less than. And then in this home where I grew up, our feelings were never expressed, validated. We were just always fine. In fact, my mama had a sign that she put in her front yard that said, we are fine. Thank you very much. I saw my mama get mad at my daddy one time in the 18 years that I lived at home. She started crying, she walked out, slammed the door, got in the car, and drove off. As a young person, what I heard was, when people get angry, they leave. So I right then decided I would do whatever it took to keep you from getting angry with me. So that's kind of how I started. I mean, you know, there's a baggage already, and I haven't even met an alcoholic yet. So I was senior in high school, and Bill and I met, and I fell in love with this man, and we dated for 4.5 years, and after we graduated from college, we got married, and we moved to Austin, Texas. Wait, I forgot to set my clock. Oh. It's too late? Okay. Oh, so y'all are going to be held captive for a while. I really intended to do this because I always forget, and this time I was going to make it be right. Okay. See, I'm going to do it right again. So we're in Austin, and I got to teach school. I wanted to be a school teacher more than anything. Teaching is my passion. I loved it. And Bill got a job, and so we are just on this part of the journey is so exciting because we're just newlyweds. And he goes to his work, and I go and teach first grade, and we're just happy people. And then he had to travel every once in a while for his job, so he would call me, and he'd say, you know what, we had happy hour today, and that meeting was wrapped around it. I really enjoyed that. And then he'd come home, and he'd say, you know what, they're serving free drinks on the plane. He said, I really like that. And the next thing you know, beer starts showing up in the refrigerator, and there's a lot of beer, and I'm starting to count them. Now, we have only been married a few months, and I am already counting beers because that was not what my home was like growing up. My parents were social drinkers. They drank every once in a while at a party, but we did not have alcohol in the refrigerator. So I'm paying attention. So we're having a good time. I'm enjoying it, enjoying life, enjoy teaching. And then I became pregnant, and I was so excited because I wanted to be a mommy even more than I wanted to teach. So I need to tell you a little story. I was 8 months pregnant, and we were having a beautiful Catholic Italian wedding in San Antonio. And so Bill and I got dressed up early on this Saturday morning, and we drove to San Antonio. And it was a glorious wedding, just beautiful. And the family's all there, and we have a beautiful reception, and champagne is flowing, and everybody's having a wonderful time. And then my cousin and his bride were going to fly to Hawaii for their honeymoon. So we all load up and go to the airport, and we're going to wave goodbye to them at the airport. And so people kept coming up to me saying, your husband is the funniest thing. And I said, yeah, I think so too. And then somebody else would come up and say, Bill has just kept us in stitches. And I said, really? Now, I was a little apprehensive because Bill was raised by a single mom as an only child. And you put him in these big Catholic Italian gatherings, and he was not a happy camper. But then I decided, well, maybe he just caught on and knew that this is what he needed to do. So, yay! And so we wave goodbye to the beautiful honeymoon couple, and then we get ready to leave the airport, and we can't find Butler. And so we have him paged, and we go up and down, and we go out to the car, and there is no Bill. And so my brother-in-law comes up, and he says, I found your husband. And I said, you did? And he said, yep. And I said, where is he? He said, he's passed out in the men's room. And I went, oh, my goodness, what happened? And so we had to get an airport attendant to take the door off the hinges. And we got a wheelchair, and they held him up so I could buckle his breeches. And then, you know, and then we put him in the wheelchair. And then, you know, my brother-in-law said, I'll push the wheelchair. I said, no, 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 he's my husband. I'll push the wheelchair. So I am 8.5 months pregnant, and I'm pushing that wheelchair. Butler's sliding out. We're shoving him back in again. And my mother is walking along beside me saying, Stephanie, I cannot believe your husband is drunk. I said, oh, Mama, don't say that. Bless his little heart. If you ever hear me say bless his little heart, I'm having an Al-Anon slip. I said, Mama, he's not drunk. He's just sick. She said, Stephanie, your husband is drunk. I said, stop, stop. The reason I'm telling you that is because 19 years later, I am in a psychiatrist's office saying, do you think he could have a brain tumor? My denial was put in place that July of 1969. He is not drunk. He is just sick. And I said that over and over and over again for years. Well, in August of 69, a beautiful little baby girl was born, and her name is Laura. And I just love to have Laura's, and I'm so happy. And then 21 months later, our son Wes is born. So this part of my journey could not be better. I am with the man that I love. I have two healthy children. Thank you, God. And I get to be a stay-at-home mom. And so I just think this is all going to be beautiful. There's a little problem, and Bill's drinking. I'm counting, and it's escalating. And I'm trying to keep track of all that. And then, I'm trying also to be, I took that sign out of my mama's front yard, and I brought it to my front yard. And I said, we are fine, thank you very much. But we did have a few little problems. Laura, she was angry. She was born angry. And then she corrected me and said, I wasn't born angry, Mom. I was fine until Wes was born. But anger, she just, if I said sit, she would stand up. And I wanted her to be like me, follow the rules. Just pay attention, follow the rules, do the right thing. Then our sign stands in place really nicely. And so I'm trying really hard to do that. Wes is getting his insides filled up like his mama by the outside. So he's playing soccer and baseball, and he's doing all of that. And Bill's drinking is escalating. And I'm trying to keep it all together, but I am not getting that hole inside of me filled up. So I'm a PTA president. And I help build a playscape, and I'm a secretary for a service organization, and I'm a Brownie Scout leader, and, I was just going to do all this so that I would feel better about myself. It really was, I'm not getting all those kudos that I thought I needed at home, so I went to the outside to try to get myself filled up. So in the middle of all of this, trying to get Laura to behave, trying to be the best soccer mom in the whole world, counting Bill's drinks, being the PTA president. I'm doing all of this. And then we have a border collie. Our border collie's name was Flopsy. Beautiful, beautiful puppy. Just love Flopsy. But Flopsy got pregnant. And we've never had that experience before. And so I decided that I wanted to shampoo her before delivery day. I wanted her to look good. And so, there's a little break in the action. I didn't have to be on the soccer field. I bathed Flopsy, and then I wanted to be sure, because sometimes, dogs run to dry, and sometimes you towel dry them. And so I wanted to do it right. And I read on the bottle, and it said, do not use on pregnant dogs. Called Dr. Pigott. I said, Dr. Pigott, I think I've killed this litter of puppies. And he said, Stephanie, it's going to be a couple of weeks, and we'll see what happens. And sure enough, 2 weeks later, this beautiful first puppy was born, but it was born dead. And I called Dr. Pigott, and I said, oh, I have killed the litter. He said, just wait, there's a lot in there. The next puppy was born, and it was okay. So I called Dr. Pigott, and I said, I didn't kill all of them. We have a healthy puppy. And he said, that's just really good. 30 minutes later, another puppy was born, and it was okay. So I called Dr. Pigott, and I said, we have another healthy puppy. And he says, that's really good, Stephanie. And so over the course of the day, Flopsy had 7 puppies. I called Dr. Pigott after every puppy. But the last puppy was born, and it had trouble breathing. And so I was just like, oh, but I thought I saved him. I saved him. I didn't kill him. But now I've got this one. And he said, well, Stephanie, I said, Dr. Pigott, what do I do? He said, do you have any alcohol in your home? I wanted to say, yeah, what kind? And I said, yes. And he said, I want you to put a little bit on a teaspoon, put it in the puppy's mouth, and then massage it down the puppy's throat. It will break up all that phlegm, and that puppy's going to be okay. And I said, okay, I think I can do that. And he said, and then, Stephanie, sit down and drink the rest of that bottle. If I could have, I would have. I'm so tired. I'm trying so hard to keep everything going. And now we've got these 7 little puppies running around. And Laura, I'm telling you, she was really our problem. And so she was like standing on the roof of the house going, these people are crazy, somebody come help me. And I'm trying to get her down to behave and do the right thing, and she's saying, make me. And, you know, and she, I bet y'all might have had some kids like this where you tell them something and they roll their eyes. Oh, yeah. Okay, Laura was really good at that. And so I did not like that, and so I decided to take her to a psychologist. And so we took her and we said, would you fix her, please? So he met with Bill, and he met with me, and he met with Laura. And he came back, and he said, well, and pulled us all three back together again, and he said, I need to tell you that of the three of you, your daughter is the healthiest. Laura Janice is going, yes! So the psychologist looked at me and he said, you're crying all the time. He said, what's going on with you? And he looked at Bill and he said, I think you might have a drinking problem. He said, your daughter is expressing her feelings. She's doing it inappropriately, but you know how Laura feels. So I'm just counting Bill's drinks, and I'm really concerned. I don't know what we're going to do about this. And we already found out it wasn't, well, it was Laura, but he told us it wasn't. And so anyway, so Laura is now in high school. She has a beautiful singing voice, and she is in the choir. And sometimes when she sings, her jaws lock open. She's beautiful when you look at her from the front, but when she turned sideways, she had a very protruding chin. So found out that we needed to have that corrected. So Laura goes in for major surgery. And they're going to crack the bones here and scoot that jaw back, and then they're going to wire her mouth shut. I love that part. So we're at the hospital. I'm at the hospital with Laura, and I have my first moment of clarity. I am doing this marriage and this family all by myself. Bill is passed out at home. And I started paying attention. And I was really tired. You know, I think when you come into your first Al-Anon meeting, there needs to be a sign above the door that says, are you tired? If you're tired, come in and sit down. If you're not, good luck. And I mean, I was exhausted. I had tried everything. I was trying to get Laura to be good. I was trying Wes to believe he was the best sports person ever, and I wanted Bill to stop drinking, and I just couldn't do it all. So in the summer of 1985, I sat with Bill, and I said, I can't do this anymore. I said, I love you too much to watch you kill yourself with alcohol, and I think you're dying. And I can't watch it. And I said, you either need to leave or you need to get sober. And he said, I'm leaving. So he left. And here I am with these two teenage kids, and I'm teaching school. I'd gone back to teaching after the kids had some time. And I thought, you know, I don't know how we're going to live. I don't know what's going to happen now. But I knew that I could not watch him kill himself with alcohol, and I knew that was the problem. So a friend of his from work, Jerry, called, and he said, I heard you kicked Butler out. And he said, and I need to offer you something. He said, I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I would like to take you to a meeting. Would you like to go? And I said, all I ever did was cry. If you asked me about my character defects, who knows? All I did was cry. I could not tell you how I felt. I could not do it. And so Jerry took me to my very first Al-Anon meeting on July the 24th of 1985. And I walked into that room, and oh, y'all were so loving. And you said, you don't need to do anything, but just tell us your name. That's okay, just keep coming back. In that meeting, I heard some things that I did not know. I did not know that alcoholism was a disease. I had no idea. I had been judging that man and finding him lacking for years. I felt so sad about that. I did not know it was a disease. And then y'all told me it was a family disease. And you said if you have raised children in an alcoholic home, you have raised sick kids. And I thought my heart would break. And then you said, but you did the best you could with the knowledge that you had at the time. And if you want to feel better, you need to get a sponsor. You need to go to meetings. You need to read the literature, and you need to work the steps. And I was, okay. And I am so grateful that y'all had the patience to work with me, to just welcome me in. It's going to be okay. You just put your arms out, gave me a hand to hold. And so I, you know, and then the blessing of all blessings happened. There was a lady at one of my Al-Anon meetings, and she became my sponsor. Her name is Blanche. And Blanche said, let me have your hand, and let's start spending some time together. And I met with Blanche every week for an hour until I was through with the ninth step. And Blanche did some things for me that I can't even begin to tell you. It was the unconditional love. She just loved me. She didn't need anything but for me to come and sit on her couch. The sad thing is, that hour, I went, blah, 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 blah. And then Blanche would say, at 5 minutes left, would you like some feedback on that? You know, I think we need to be heard. There's a new word that's out right now called conversation. We need to have conversations. We need to be heard. And Blanche listened to me. And then she said, there's something else I want to tell you, Stephanie. You are living with a God that you are afraid of. And I would like to tell you some things about my higher power. My higher powers can't do bad. Cannot do bad. And my higher power loves you no matter what. And you can't earn it, and you can't make it go away. It's called grace. And Blanche held me in her arms, and she walked me through the steps. I cannot tell you the gratitude I feel that she was willing to give of her time. 2 weeks after I asked Bill to leave, he called, and he said he'd been trying to sober himself up, and he couldn't do it. So on August the 6th of 85, Bill began his spiritual journey. And now this is the best part of my journey. I am so happy. We are now speaking the same language. And he goes to his meeting and he comes home and he says, we talked about step 11. What'd you talk about? I said, we talked about detachment. And he's got a sponsor, Lawn, that's just wonderful. And I'm working with Blanche. And I'm telling you, we're just, oh my gosh. And, you know, y'all told me that I'm not supposed to enable my children. So if Laura would come and say, I need help with algebra, I'd say, I took algebra. You're on your own, kid. And then I was told that's not what you meant. But I was trying to do that detachment thing because I knew that I had been enabling and trying to, you know, fix things that were broken because wasn't that my job, you know? No. And so Bill's doing his journey, and we're doing it together, but he's working the AA program and I'm doing the Al-Anon program. Very, very grateful. But then, you know, we just have this beautiful daughter of ours. And Laura did not like a drunk daddy, but she really didn't like a sober daddy. He was paying attention. So Laura is now a senior in high school. She has 3 months left to graduate. And she's broken some rule, I don't know what. And so we've grounded her. And we've said, you know, you have to come home. Well, after she had been grounded for a week, she came in and she said, the University of Texas is playing ball and I'd like to go see that game. Can I go? So Bill and I talked about it and we said, yes, you just need to be home by 6 o'clock on Sunday. She said, okay. 6 o'clock on Sunday came and Laura didn't come home. And she didn't come home on Monday. And she didn't come home on Tuesday. And I'm going to my Al-Anon meetings going, oh my God, what can I do? We've got to call the cops. I don't know where she is. And she just needed a few more months to graduate from high school. And I believed it was God's will for everybody to graduate from high school. So I am really working hard to get her just get through the high school, and then we're done. You know, so I go to my Al-Anon meetings, and y'all are saying things to me like, well, what would you be doing if this weren't happening? Ugh, it is happening, and I need you to tell me what to do. We don't give advice. We just share our experience, strength, and hope. So Bill's calling his sponsor, and he's saying, Lon, what do I do? And Lon said, you need to love and accept her exactly where she is. And Bill said, we don't know where she is, and that's the problem. So I'm a mess. I'm teaching first grade in this little private school, and I'm trying to do that, but I'm so worried because I don't know what's going to happen to her. And I have another moment of clarity. On Wednesday of that week, I'm getting in the car, and it's as if there's another voice that says to me, if what you're doing isn't working, do something different. And I thought, I have been trying to love that daughter well, and it's not working. On Friday of that week, she called and she said, hey, Mom, I'm coming home. As if nothing had happened. And so I said, Laura, I love you and you can't come home. And she went, what'd you say? She was very angry. And I said, I love you and you can't come home. And I hung up the phone. And I was so peaceful. You know when y'all say God will do for you what you can't do for yourself? That's what it felt like. So Bill walks in the door and he said, what's up? And I said, I heard from Laura. And he said, oh, thank God, where is she? I said, I don't know. And he said, what? I said, I told her she couldn't come home. He went, Stephanie, why would you do that? He hadn't been to any Al-Anon meetings. I don't know, but, you know, I told her she couldn't come home. And so that's on a Friday. On Saturday morning, I am in my Al-Anon meeting, and I am pulling people aside going, oh, my God, you won't believe what I did. I told her she couldn't come home, and now I don't know what to do. And, you know, and this wonderful gentleman came up, and he patted my hand, and he said, did you know you could have a good day anyway? And you know what? That's the truth. I could have a good day anyway. So Laura was gone for a month, and Bill had been on the phone trying to find a treatment center that would take an angry teenager. He wanted a program for a teenager that had anger management problems, and so he found one in Denton, Texas. So we found out that she had stopped by Cherie, so we called her, and I said, if you want any help, we can help you. And she said, what do I have to do? Daddy and I'll come get you. So we went and picked Laura up. I cried all the way to Denton, Texas. I could not believe my daughter. She did not even look like herself. She had been sleeping in the parks. She had been playing pool in pool halls. She had been beat up. She looked horrible. I cried all the way to Denton. Cried all the way home. And then I thought, wait, I know where she is, and I know she's safe. So I did what Blanche had taught me, and I said, thank you, God. Thank you, God. When I would call Blanche and tell her, Laura's out there, and I don't know what I'm going to do, she would say things to me like, did you know that God loves Laura more than you do? And I thought, that's good. That's really good. Because when I found her, I was going to kill her. But we took her and dropped her off in Denton, Texas, and about 2 days later, I get a call from her, and she says, Mom, I need to ask you something. How would you feel about me being an alcoholic? And I said, Laura, any 12-step program you want to latch on to is okay with me. She said, we've been inventorying my drinking, and I'm an alcoholic. So on April the 6th of 1987, my daughter began her spiritual journey. Oh, my gosh. Now we're standing in open AA meetings, and we're saying the Lord's Prayer, and Laura's there with us, and I'm crying, but we're all saying the prayer together. And I am just, it was like, oh my gosh, God, how did you do that? There was just this one little problem. When it was time for Laura to leave the treatment center, and we went for family week, and Laura wanted her daddy to make amends or something. I'm not even sure what that was, but she got kind of angry, and so she threw a chair up against the wall. And so the counselor said, I don't think she's ready to go home yet. So we ended up taking Laura to a halfway house in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Now, let me tell you, I just wanted Laura to graduate from high school. That's all I wanted. God said, let's let her graduate by correspondence, and then let's give her a 12-step program to live the rest of her life by. I would have cut it short. I would have cut it short. I was in a meeting one time, and somebody told me, or they said in the meeting, that God has four answers to our prayers. One of them is, yes, I thought you'd never ask. Another one was, yes, and here's more. Another one is, no, not yet. And another one was, no, I love you too much. So the answer to my prayer for Laura to graduate from high school was, yes, and here's more. So now we're, oh boy, I'm just as happy as I can be in this journey, and Wes is getting ready to graduate from high school. Okay, Wes, do follow the rules, honey. Walk across the stage, do the right thing. And right before his senior year, Wes is playing football and doing those two-a-days, and Wes gets really sick, and he ends up in the hospital with viral meningitis. He has 104 temperature for 7 days. I called Blanche, and I said, Blanche, why would God do this to our boy? He has done nothing wrong. And she said, Stephanie, God didn't do this. Your boy has a virus. God will sustain you no matter what happens. And sure enough, Wes did survive. The difference, though, in that hospital visit in Laura's was Bill and I were there together and we prayed together. So thank you for the programs. So then Wes graduates from the University of Texas, and from high school, he goes to the University of Texas, and now Maya, this is just great. Laura's home, she's sober, we're just doing great, and Bill comes home and says, how would you like to move to Reston, Virginia? And I said, why would we do that? And he said, because I've been getting on airplanes most of my adult life, and I'm tired. And now that the kids are taken care of, how about if we go to Virginia? And I said, let's go. The reason I said that was because houses in Austin, Texas in 1990 were not selling, so we weren't going anywhere. Our house sold in 2 weeks. So I am in the middle of the den floor crying. The AAs and the Al-Anons are there, and this wonderful guy, Tom, comes in. He says, what is the matter with you? And I said, well, I told Bill I'd go, but I just don't think I could go. And he said, what? And I said, I can't leave our children, and I can't leave Blanche, and I can't leave my gynecologist, and I can't leave. And he said to me, Stephanie, you know what you have in Austin, Texas. Why don't you go see what they have in Reston, Virginia? And you know what? They have Al-Anon in Reston, Virginia. They don't do it right, but they have Al-Anon. I called Blanche, and she said, what's the matter? And I said, they didn't even talk about a step in this meeting tonight. And she said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm telling them how we do it in Texas. She said, you need to stop that. And I did, and the meetings got really, really good. So we're up there for a few months, and I get a call from Laura, and she says, Mom, I need to tell you something. And I said, what? And she said, I found Wes passed out tonight. And I said, well, bless his little heart. And she said, Mama, Wes is drunk. And I said, no, honey, he saw you lose your home to alcoholism, and he saw your daddy nearly die. Wes would never take a drink. And she said, Lon and I took him to his first AA meeting today. So on January the 10th of 1991, Wes began his journey. So I called Blanche and said, how many miracles does one family get? She said, are you going to try to limit God one more time? And so now I'm just telling you, this is just great. We're just having the best time. We come back into Austin, and Laura and Wes and Bill and I, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful part of the journey. I have started teaching school in a little bitty private school that I just loved. And Bill and I have opened our house. We're having big book studies in our house every Wednesday evening, and it is just a wonderful gathering. And so things are really going really well until, well, Laura calls. And she says, Mom, I need to tell you something. And I said, what? And she said, I'm pregnant. And I said, no, you're not. She said, Mom, I'm going to have a baby. I said, no, honey, you're not going to have a baby. She said, Mom, I said, Laura, honey, first you have the wedding and then you have the baby. You did not have a wedding. You are not having a baby. She said, Mom, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to have an abortion? I said, no. She said, do you want me to give it up for adoption? I said, no. She said, what do you want? I said, I want for you to not be pregnant. Blanche said I was opting for one of my unavailable choices. So I didn't tell anybody because that was a reflection on what a good mom I was, although I don't know why y'all didn't do something. She'd been sober 5 years. And so Rita and George are at our house one Wednesday night, and everybody's leaving. I said, Rita, come here. I need to tell you something. It's really, really bad. She said, what? I said, no, this is really bad. She said, what? And I said, Laura is pregnant. And she said, oh. I said, no, Rita, you don't understand. She is not married. She went, oh. I said, Rita, she said, Stephanie, isn't it a shame that you have to judge this and find it lacking? Can't you just say it's what is? It's just what is. On June the 6th of 1992, the most beautiful baby girl you have ever seen was born. Her name is Stephanie Grace. I was there crying. Bill was there sober. Wes was there. Laura, we didn't have to have a wedding to have a baby. We have the most beautiful baby, and I would have missed it because I would have judged it and found it lacking. Oh, my goodness. So let me tell you a little bit about Grace. She's in second grade, and the teacher asked everybody to stand and introduce themselves. My Grace stands up, and she says, my name is Grace. I'm an alcoholic, and I got She says, I have 7 years of sobriety. She had never heard anybody introduce themselves any other way. She was going to AA meetings before she was born. So if you introduce yourself, say your name. And just... So anyway, the teacher was horrified. She called Laura. Laura said, no, I'm the alcoholic. They went, what? Laura said, no, I'm sorry. That's our Grace. That is our Grace. This past June, Grace turned 26 years old. And what a blessing. I have a place in my heart that is just shaped for her. Just shaped for her. What a blessing. So a year later, 1993, I get a call from San Antonio, and they tell me that my daddy had an abdominal aneurysm, and it ruptured, and he died instantly. And as sad as I was about that, I loved my daddy. I was so grateful I had been in the 12-step program. Everything was clean and clear with my dad. I had not one regret. So now I have to tell you the part of my story that I wish I didn't have to tell you. Sometimes I wish I could change the past, and this is one of those times. In 1994, in February, Bill had 8.5 years of sobriety. But he suffered from depression, and he couldn't live with his humanness, and he committed suicide. I need you to hear something this evening. AA works. Bill cherished his sobriety. Depression is an illness, and if it goes untreated, it will kill you. Bill had been on and off of antidepressants most of his adult life. He took himself off. He was feeling really good. We had been to the grocery store and to dinner the night before. I didn't know. He just hid it from me. The psychiatrist that I went to see after it happened said it was an instantaneous decision. You know, I thought I would die because I didn't know how to do life without him. But you know what? When I came into Al-Anon, you told me that I would never have to do anything alone again. And you stuck by your word to me. You held my hand. It took every phone call, every hug, every meeting, every time that you wrapped your arms around me for me to be able to put one foot in front of the other. I had to seek counseling. Blanche said, "You've got to get some outside help, Stephanie." And I went to see this wonderful counselor, and her name was Nancy. And she said, "I need to tell you something. You have been traumatized. When your life changes in one instant and will never be the same again, it's called trauma. And you have been traumatized. You need to know that because it widens the idea of grief. There's more than grief. There's just added things." I went to the grocery store a few months after Bill died, and I started hyperventilating, and I'd never done that. And it scared me, and I called Nancy, and she said, "Stephanie, you've been traumatized. You can't go where all the sounds and the lights and the pieces." She said, "Get somebody else to do your grocery shopping for you." And I did. But I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't had some outside help. I met with Nancy for a long time for me to find some peace. And then Blanche just wrapped her arms around me. And then there was another little benefit. You know, sometimes I can't believe how much God loves me. I had been sitting in meetings with a beautiful woman, and her name was Dawn. And she called my house, and she told whoever answered the phone, "If Stephanie ever needs to talk, I'm here for her." Dawn had lost a son. She knew what pain was. And so Dawn became like a Virginia sponsor. I'm meeting, you know, with Blanche and with Dawn, but I just sat there and cried, and she held me. So we had a ceremony for him there in Virginia, and my teachers came, and they said, "Who are all these people?" And I said, "They're my family." She said, "You've lived here 4 years. I've lived here 20. I don't know half this many." And I thought, well, you told me you'd be there, and you kept your word. And we brought him back to Texas and had a beautiful graveside service for him. And I don't know how you go on after that other than the grace of God. I had a job. Kids wanted me to come home. I had a job teaching that I loved. I just went back and did the next right thing because I didn't know what else to do. But I had a loving higher power in my life that I knew I was going to be okay. And a lot of times he showed up with skin on and he looked like you. Thank you. So the next year, both of my children got married, and that felt kind of like a death in the family. I was really grateful for them, but it looked like things were changing again. And it was like, wait, I can't change again. But it's what happened. And then almost 2 years to the day after Bill died, I walked into my kitchen, and I went, "He's not coming back." It took 2 years for me to get that information from my head to my heart. He's not coming back. So I called the kids and said, "I'm going to come home." Laura was pretty happy with it. Anyway, so I just started to open. By the way, y'all need to know this. Bill had been a wonderful employee. He had been working for this company, and he'd put some money in, and they'd put money in, and there was this lump sum of money. We've never had money. I didn't even know what to do with it. And so I just didn't know what to do. So I invested it with this fella, and then I decided that, you know, I'll give my furniture away. Come get this couch, $5. Get this. I don't care. And my teacher said, "Where are you going? Are you going back to Austin?" I said, "No, it's gotten too big." I said, "You know what? Since when we're in Virginia, you can't ever see the sunsets. The trees are too tall. I want to see a sunset." And I didn't know it, but I love water. And you know what? I've never lived in a new house before. And it's as if God said, "Come here, I got one for you." So I found a house on Lake LBJ, and the sun sets over Pack Saddle Mountain right out my back door. I just couldn't believe it. I was so grateful. So I'm down there and I'm thinking, okay, Grace and I are just going to go on these sober cruises and we're just going to have more fun. And I need to go buy some furniture. So I call this Bruce guy and say, if you'd please just send my money down here, then I can start my life. And so he said, the check's in the mail. Okay, so then it doesn't come. So I call back and I go to Merrill Lynch and said, please go find Bruce and let's get the money here. And Bruce stole almost $300,000. That was like a death in the family. I knew the man. He had been to my house for coffee. So now I'm a mess. Now I don't know what to do. New house, no furniture. I call Laura. She says, Mama, get on your knees and pray for clear and concise direction. I said, my knees hurt. I've been doing that. And I'm crying, and Blanche is just worried about me, and we're praying. We don't know what to do. And I'm calling Dawn, and Dawn's praying. And I said, I don't know what you do when this happens. And so, you know what God did? He built an elementary school 7 minutes from my house. And they needed a first grade teacher. Can you believe it? I couldn't. Oh my gosh. So this Bruce thing, every time somebody would say, how are you doing? I'd have a knot in my stomach. So I went to a lot of open AA meetings and they said, you need to pray for Bruce. And so I was praying for that son of a bitch. I would do anything to get rid of that knot in my stomach, but my goodness, really? How do you do that? How do you steal from this? So they asked me to press charges, and I did, and Bruce went to prison. Only could go for 2 years, and they ordered him to make restitution, and I was so happy about that. So I got a check, and I called Laura, and she said, how much is it, Mom? And I said, $25. She said, Mom, you're going to be dead by the time he finishes paying off. So I said, that's okay, I've got a job. And so I go to school and I get my first paycheck and I call Laura, ooh, I got a paycheck. And she said, I'm so glad, Mom, how much is it? And I'm laughing. She says, what's so funny? And I said, it's not enough to make a house payment. She said, why are you laughing? And I said, because I guess it never was about money. I guess God wanted me back in that classroom. Well, I still live in that house today. It's been 22 years. I'm still in that house and I've been just fine. God just does it, and that's what I can do. And I'm still getting checks from Bruce. They've gone up a little bit, but and now I can say his name, and I pray for him every morning. I still do that. So that's all I know to do. So anyway, so now I'm back teaching, and everything's good, and I'm talking to Dawn, and then I'm with Blanche, and then I have this little red car that I just love, but it has over 100,000 miles on it. And so Blanche happens to be in an accident. And so I'm going to go see Blanche, but my little red car stops. And so when I get to the hospital, I said to her, and she said, Stephanie, are you okay? I said, well, the car stopped, but I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be okay. And so then I keep going every weekend when I'm not teaching to go see Blanche in the hospital. And she does not survive her injuries. I got a call from Ellen, and that's her daughter. And she said, if you want to say goodbye to my mama, you better hurry. And I jumped in that little red car and I said, you know, God, I didn't get to say goodbye to Bill. And I didn't get to say goodbye to my daddy. Please let me say goodbye to Blanche. And I was holding her hand when she took her last breath. And I could say, I hope you see the people who you have helped just because you were willing. Just because you were willing. That woman, I hear her voice all the time. What a gift she was to me. They had a memorial service for her, and so I'm getting ready to go that morning, and Laura calls, and she says, Mom, you're going to tell them how important Blanche was to us, aren't you? I said, Laura, you hated Blanche. And she said, yes, Mom, but if it weren't for Blanche, I might not be alive today. She taught you not to accept unacceptable behavior. She taught you that there were consequences for my choices. She taught you to, you know, I had to approve of your behavior. And she said, if it hadn't been for Blanche, I might not be alive today. And I could share that with the group. So now Dawn and I are just constantly, I'm on the phone with Dawn all the time. She was in Reston when Bill died, but she moved to Chicago. So now I'm talking to Dawn all the time. And I'm teaching school, and I'm just having the best time. And I get to see the kids as often as I can, and I'm so grateful for that. And then I get a little bit older, and I go to see the orthopedic guy because I've got a knee that's not working really well. And so I get there, and the guy says to me, how tall are you? And I said, I'm 5'2". And he measures me, and he says, no, you're 4'11". And I said, what happened to me? And he said, you've been standing on concrete for 34 years, and your discs have compressed. The only mistake I made was to tell Laura, because she said, then you're retiring. You're not going to do that anymore. And I said, Laura. She said, Mom, pretty soon you're going to be on eye level with those first graders. I didn't want to quit. I love those children. They have walked across my soul. I have had a Rosie and a Loki and a Steele and a John. I mean, I have had these children, and I have thanked God every day. I was excited to go to school every day. And I go to sign those retirement papers, and Laura made me. And the lady said, why are you crying? I said, because my daughter made me. I wasn't working a very good Al-Anon program at that time. But, you know, it was the right thing to do. You know, 70 years old, can't keep with those first graders. I just couldn't keep up with them. And they replaced me with a 27-year-old. That hurt. But one of my Al-Anon friends said, how many did it take? I like that. So now today, let me see if I can bring you up to date. I am so blessed. I am just so blessed. I am retired, and I do go to Al-Anon meetings. My home group is the One Day at a Time Al-Anon meeting in Marble Falls, Texas. We meet every Monday night at 7:30. I am inviting you to come. We would love to have you. I'm sponsoring. I'm working with Dawn. I'm still working the steps, still trying to do that 6 and 7, because I just have a few little character defects that are still there. And understand it's a continuous process, and grateful for that, grateful for that. I have been blessed to go to some retreats that have just enriched my life beyond measure. I was at one that a week ago, and I need to tell you a phrase that was used that I will forever cherish. We're supposed to pay attention. We're supposed to be awake. We need to pay attention to our lives. We need to be awake. We need to be astonished. Just look for the little stuff. It doesn't have to be a great thing. And then we need to have conversation. We need to talk with folks. It's really important that we share what's going on with us. Okay, I got to hurry. You're going to hear about Laura tomorrow, and I'll talk to you after her talk. I'm sure there'll be a few things I'll need to clear up for you. I don't want you to leave here with the wrong impression. My son Wes, after Bill's suicide, Wesley left. He hasn't dealt with it even to today. So he moved to Wyoming, and he got on a horse, and he worked the ranches in Wyoming, and he loved it. But a horse threw him and then fell on top of him and broke his back. Wes has a wedged break in his back. He's walking, he's okay, but he got hooked on pain pills. He had been sober, and then he got hooked on pain pills. Then he got clean from those, and then he went back to drinking again. So right now, Wes knows I love him. You know, I don't know what his story is. He's out there writing. He's on his journey, you know, and so I just pray for him. And I'll hear from him, you know, I'll text him. He'll text me. He was out not too long ago fishing. He, you know, he's going to do his thing. My beautiful Grace, a little over 2 years ago, said, Grandma, I need to tell you something. And I said, what? And she said, I'm pregnant. I went, you are? I learned my lesson. You are. I said, that is just wonderful. Well, in December of 2016, a beautiful baby girl was born. Her name is Harper. Laura's going to talk to you about her tomorrow. She's 19 months old. I'm a great grandmother. It is like God has said, yes, and here's more. She is a joy. I am retired, and I get to go play with Harper. I absolutely love that child. So our lives continue. The journey goes on. You know, I'm just blessed to be here with y'all tonight. I want to read you one thing out of Our Courage to Change. It's by Cahil Gibran. And it so much explains my life. I would not exchange the laughter of my heart for the fortunes of the multitudes, nor would I be content with converting my tears into calm. It is my fervent hope that my whole life on this earth will ever be tears and laughter. And that's how I feel it has been. You've been so kind to let me share with you tonight my journey. Thank you very much.